The genocide of Palestinians has continued for almost 7 months. 30,000 of our fellow human beings have been murdered and tens of thousands more injured. When we witness these atrocities behind the safety of our screens, we cannot forget that these are our fellow human beings and not just another statistic in an ever-sickening world. They are our brothers, our sisters, and our friends. Their struggle is our struggle. When Gaza bleeds, the whole world bleeds. Through this pain, we want to find connection and hope. And that is why we are sharing the stories of Rami and Sobhay with you today. Welcome back to the Moneyless Society podcast and our second installment of the Gaza Frontlines, where we interview families alive in Gaza and in desperate need of funding to escape their war-torn home and find safety again. Rami and Sobhay are currently trapped in Gaza. Rami, in the south in Rafah, was able to successfully get his sister, who is in desperate need of medical attention, and the rest of his family out of Gaza to Egypt. Unfortunately, he was forced to stay behind. Sobhay and his family were forced out of their home in North Gaza and only given 10 minutes notice before a bomb destroyed everything they knew. They have been on the run from constant bombings, moving from house to house, street to street, ever since. Amanda Smith and Ev Malcolm host this conversation to give space for Rami and Sobhay to share their stories. They are joined by our wonderful volunteer, Rose Abadi, who is translating, allowing our guests to speak freely in their native tongue. As you may have guessed, it's difficult to find a safe and quiet place with stable internet connection while constantly under siege. For this reason, we ask our listeners to be patient with any audio and technical difficulties experienced through the creation of this episode. We want to thank you for allowing this space in your consciousness as our guests share their brave and harrowing stories. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
The old world is ending.
And we have the opportunity to rethink everything.
This is a show about the systemic problems in our world.
And the real solutions we have today.
To transition from an apocalyptic storm of war, scarcity, and ecological collapse.
To create an abundantly advanced, collaborative society.
That sustains all life.
You may think it's an impossible dream.
But the alternative is an inevitable nightmare.
We're your hosts, Matt Holton,
Amanda Smith,
and Zachary Marlowe.
And together,
we can move past this economic absurdity
and come together to actualize our collective potential
to create something completely new.
We are
Moneyless Society.
Should I ever tell my story because the internet will be disconnected soon?
And please do. Thank you so much for having the courage to be here with us today and take the risk that you may be taking in order to share your story with us.
ماشي انا احكي لهم انه انا من كنت من سكان غزه الشيخ رضوان.
Okay, so he was from Sheikh Ridwan in Gaza.
ونزحنا في اول الحرب على رفح.
Okay, so from the first war, from the beginning of the war, they went down to Rafah.
وبعدها يعني تلقينا خبر استشهاد عيلتي اللي هي سيدي وستي وخاتي واولادها وجوزها.
Okay, so then they got the news that his family members were martyred, for example, like his aunt, uncle, and other family members.
وبعدها يعني بيوم من بعد ما استشهد دار سيدي استشهد خالي ومرته واولاده ثاني يوم يعني.
So the day after that, from his uncle passing, his other uncle on his other side of the family and his wife. وحكيت مرته واولادهم كمان استشهدوا.
ثاني يوم من استشهاد دار سيدي واحنا كان عندنا يعني ابويا كان يعمل بتجاره السيارات وتدمر حالنا يعني اربع سيارات تدمروا تم دهسهم من قبل الدبابات وانقصف بيتنا بعد هيك تلقينا خبر انه تم يعني قصف البيت عند الشيخ رضوان.
Okay, so prior to all of this, just to re-emphasize, after he had heard that his family members were martyred, The next day, he also got news that his family members on his other side were also martyred. So his uncle, his wife, and their children. And then prior to that, his dad had a business where he would do things with cars, and four of the vehicles were affected in the line of fire from the army, like with the weaponry, and it completely devastated his business.
واحكي لهم انه انا عملت حمله اللي هي على الجوفاندمي هاي حمله التبرع لعشان اختي الصغيره.
So he's saying that he has a GoFundMe right now, and the reason why he created it is for his little sister.
أختي هاي كانت يعني هي مريضة عندها تبول لا إرادة في وعندها فتح في النخاع الشوكي أصل ظهرها وبتلبس يعني بامبرز وحفاضات وعندها تجمع في الماء في سائل في الدماغ. عملنا الحملة هاي بس إحنا نسقنا إلها ولأبوي عشان تبقى في الصورة وأهلي سافروا يعني أنا حاليا موجود لحالي بس في رفح. أهلي سافروا يوم الأربعاء قبل أول امبارح.
Okay, so he created the GoFundMe for his little sister because she has a medical condition that affects her spine as well as her cranial area, and he created it so he could get money to take like a X-ray for that as well as for his father, and then his family left and he's the only one left in Rafah right now.
انا امبارح سافرت مع اهلي المصريين وصلت الصاله المصريه ورجعوني المصريين لانه انا ماليش اسم في التنسيقات لازم انه انا انسق وحتى انه ينزل لي اسم ويتم فحص اسمي اول بس اختي وامي واخواتي كلهم عدوا عشان ابويا له اسم واختي الصغيره لها كان اسم في المعبر وعشان هم بنات وتحت 16 سنه اما انا عشان عمري في 19 سنه رجعوني المصريين وانا هيني هلقيت حالي يعني قاعد في الخيمه.
Okay, so he's saying that he actually went to the border with his family to evacuate, but his name wasn't in the registry, and his father's name was in the registry because his father's name was his family members, including his little sister, were able to evacuate, but because of his age, they turned him away from the border, so he's the only one left right now in a tent.
وحاليا يعني انا اهلي في مصر هم بدهم يعملوا العمليه لاختي فمش عارفين حتى اي دكاتره او حد يعني يشوفوا مكان شقه لهم او حتى شغل ابويا يشتغل فاهمه بعيد عن انه انا حاليا بدي انسق واطلع الحق فيهم فاهمه علي؟
Yeah, فاهمة عليك. So he's saying that right now his family, they're trying to get the surgery for his little sister in Egypt, but it's just really difficult navigating, like, you know, how to set the doctor's appointment, where to go, who to go to, and the fact that, of course, this has affected their income, so that makes it another barrier as well. So he's right now just trying to evacuate as well, so he can just try to help his family.
As he discusses, well, explains to us, this paints this bloody picture of the carnage-infused environment that they're now having to navigate day to day. I think that in contrast, it could be helpful for our listeners to understand what their lives were like before this began. Could you ask him if he would be inclined to tell us what was life like before October of last year?
So Amanda, عم تسأل إنه بدها تعرف الناس اللي عم بسمعوا كيف كان حياتكم قبل الحرب عشان
تمام أنا عندي الطالب وعندي كل حاجة يعني حياتي أنا كنت طالب في كلية الهندسة وطالب سنة ثانية في جامعة الأزهر.
Yeah. So he was in. He said his life was good. He was in university, and he was in his second. He was in his second year.
وكنت لاعب كرة قدم يعني في نادي الهلال فريق أول وأبويا كان يعني يشتغل في تجارة السيارات وكل إشي تدمر يعني أربع سيارات كان لنا ويعني دبابات معايا صور لهم والدبابات يعني مهرساهم وحياتنا هو مقصوف ومعايا صور قبل الحرب كيف كنا وكيف كنا عايشين وكيف كان حياتنا.
He said that he used to play football and he was a part of a club where they would do that. And he was also saying that his dad had his car business and the four vehicles were completely obliterated during this. And he said that he has photographs of the carnage of that. And he said he also has videos and photographs of what life was like prior to that to show the difference.
It seems like a reoccurring theme in these interviews that we've been doing with Palestinians is that they are such a well-educated and peace-loving demographic. The culture is about living life, learning, loving, and just being. And now they've come under besiege of this big monstrous arm of imperialism. A lot of people would agree.
Amanda can't تحكي إنه الناس اللي هون عم بتعلم كثير عن الفلسطينيين وإشي اللي عم بتعلموه إنه أنتوا كثير بتحبوا الحياة وبتحبوا يعني بتحبوا تدرس يعني بتحبوا كثير أشياء
صحيح يعني ثواني أوريك أنا هم حاليا الأولاد الصغار يعني بيلعبوا في المدرسة كانوا تشوفوا هذا.
He's saying that right now, yeah, that's true, and that right now, I mean, there's kids playing around him in the school, like, despite everything, they're still doing that.
So your peace-loving spirit lives on, despite the carnage.
Would it be possible, you know, I think it would be helpful for listeners to know that, like, there are people that are getting to safety, which helps, so could he talk a bit about, like, how people are, you know, getting out and how things like this are helping them do that?
Okay. فهو هلا عم بسأل إنه إذا بتقدر تحكي إنه كيف الوضع لما الناس عم بحاولوا يطلعوا من رفح يعني إذا بنقدر إذا بتقدر تحكي شوي عن الوضع هناك وكيف أشياء زي هيك زي البودكاست زي GoFundMe زي إنستغرام عم بتساعد إنه نصوت عشان الناس يقدروا يطلعوا.
أحكي لك يعني بالعربي ولا لما
أحكي لك؟ لا عادي براحتك عادي أحكي لي بالعربي no problem.
الناس ما هي مصدقة تطلع. تعرف يعني الوضع حان صعب جدا يعني تخيل الأسعار نار وكل مكان في دور معاناة على المية معاناة لما بدك تشتري شغلة معاناة على الشحن ثواني أوريك هنا أنا موجود يعني الناس تشحن حتى
He cut off halfway, but he was saying that, yes, like, you can't imagine how hard the situation is with how expensive everything is, and even, like, trying to buy something like water, and even if you have the money, like, the lines, and the low supply of that. Okay, انت قطعت لما حكيت عن كيف الأسعار نار والدور وبعدها قطعت.
لانه الكهرباء قطعه طعمها اجت الاسعار تخيل حتى كيلو السكر انه عنا ب 80 شيكل كيلو السكر بعرفش كم دولار بس يعني غالي يعني كان ابو 3 شيكل صار سعره 80 هذا ابسط مثال.
So he's just talking about like the price of water like jumps from their currency of like 3 shekels and I think it went up to 29 he said it cut off. But that's quite the jump.
And so these GoFundMes, the money that we can raise through permeating social media and our day-to-day lives with these discussions is hopefully helping. Well, it is. That's what we want to know for sure. Like this money that's coming in, it's being used to just get the basic necessities like water, food, and then get to the border.
Okay. هلا المصاري من الجوفرمي إحنا هلا عم نسأل إنه يعني هذا الإشي عم بيساعدكم يعني سهل يعني طلع المصاري لما يجي على الجوفرمي يعني
صحيح خلال دي وجوزها في بلجيكا موجودين وهم اللي هنشوفوا حتى الصفحة وأول ما يعني إحنا بس بدنا ثلاث أشياء حاليا بس من وراء هاي الصفحة أول حاجة بدي أنا أعمل عملية تبعت أختي في مصر وأوفر بس اللي هو أجار الأهل ما موجود فيه وأنا بعديها أقدر أنسق وأطلع على عند مصر بس هذا كل شيء اللي بدي من وراء الرابط.
So he's saying that yes, it is helpful. and that the first thing he would like to do with the money is to get the surgery for his sister in Egypt. The second one is to be able to afford the rent that his family has to pay in Egypt now. And the last thing, he put himself last, which is to use that to be able to evacuate. He just wants to emphasize those three things that he wants and needs would desperately, which is that surgery for his sister in Egypt, and to get the rent money for his family in Egypt, and to evacuate, to follow them, because the absolute devastation that and the shock and horror that he's experienced is so much, and that everybody that he lost was his everything. He wanted to let us know.
Excellent.
Okay, shukran Subhi, ihna asfin an al qatar.
مش مشكلة يا صديقي تفضل
وشكرا كثير انك هون
يسلم ويسلم تفضل
اوكي سو هيز ريدي تو جو سو شكرا كثير
Yeah, I think if he wants to kind of tell his story as well, what's happened to him so far and what he needs now, that would be a perfect place to start.
اوكي فاحنا يعني بدنا نبلش انه انت تحكي لنا قصتك وضعك وانت هلا ايش بدك او انت ايش بحال يعني ايش نقدر نسوي من طرفنا ونبلش من هون
اول اشي رمضان كريم عليكم جميعا
رمضان مبارك حبيبي
شكرا رمضان مبارك إيه انا صف السيد ايش قبل الحرب طول عمري انا عايش في غزة واجت الحرب في البيت يعني انه تمام اخلينا البيت طبعا كان عندنا يمكن 60 نفر العيلة كلها ناسها عنا والحمد لله بعد 10 دقايق تم تنزيل البيت بالكامل هذا في اليوم 30 او 40 من
قطع شوي لما صار القصف لا قطع بس شوي لما صار القصف في بيتكم ايش حكيت بعديها عن البيت بعد ما صار القصف
تمام لما قطع الصوت
البيت
تمام
اوكي البيت
تمام لما جت الصوت قولي لي
اوكي رح احكي لك no problem
ايه صار قصف يعني تمام إيه اليهود رنوا علينا بالاسم وقالوا لنا اخلوا معكم 10 دقائق طبعا البيت فيه 60 نفر لا شيء من يعني كل ذكرياتي كل شغلاتي مملكة في حياتي كل شيء 10 دقائق كنا مخليين
قطع بعد لما حكيت 10 دقائق تاني مرة
في اليوم الثلاثين من الحرب.
Okay, so he's saying after the 30th day of the war that their house was bombed. So he's saying that there were 60 people in the home and they only got a 10-minute warning to evacuate before the bombing happened. And that he was saying they only had 10 minutes and you know everything his whole life was in the home, just rushing out so many people.
بس البيت أول شيء راح ومن هنا بلشت قصة النزوح.
So he's saying that everyone was okay at that point, but the house was completely like demolished.
What might he want to share with our listeners and the people in the Western world about him and his family and what he hopes from here?
بس كل شيء راح كل شيء دمر.
He's saying that everything was gone. Everything was like in absolute devastation. أماندا كانت عم تسأل إذا في أي إشي الناس اللي هلا عم بسمعوا خاصة الناس اللي بالغرب أو أمريكا أو يعني طرف هذا العالم إذا في أي إشي إحنا لازم نعرف عنك عن أهلك عن الوضع يمكن إحنا مش عارفين عنه
تمام سمعني المهم منيح
Yes, so sorry, بعرف إنه مستفز Yeah, سمعتك
مش مشكلة هلقيت يا عزيزي أنا بعد انقصف بيتي باختصار نزحنا قرابة 8 مرة يقصفوا البيت نروح على بيت ثاني نزل ثلاث دور نزلت فوقينا ثلاث دور نزلت فوقينا وطلعنا عايشين الحمد لله نحمل أغراضنا ونطلع من مكان وإحنا قرابة 15 نفر بس عيلتي 15 نفر
So he was saying that something he wants people to know is that just Like, yes, a lot of his family members are okay, but people don't know the circumstances of like what okay is. And being okay means running from house to house, like running for your life to get shelter from house to house. And that each house that you go to still gets bombed. And he said that they had a total of 3 houses that they had like totaled on top of them that they had to escape out of. And I believe it cut off a little bit, but that there was at least like 15 homes that they have been like running along the way to safety. But yeah, Amanda, to answer your question, I don't think people know that that's like people from where we are. I don't think people know that that's like what safety looks like in this situation. Who is saying like, oh, thank God, like my family is okay despite all of that. But that's still what they had to go through to be okay, to be safe.
Right. Like their level of okay is still running for their life, basically, as you said. Very good point to make. And on that note, I guess to ask them what they would hope for from here is probably something still very undetermined. Probably just not to be bombed would be something they're hoping at this point, just to not have to be on the run for their lives.
تبلش من أول عشان نسمع كل إشي لأنه sorry كان الصوت كان قاطع.
طب إذا إن شاء الله النت يكون منيح. بقول لك أنا صبح من قطاع شمال قطاع غزة. تمام؟
Yes of course راح أحكي لك قطاع. Yes سامعتك منيح.
أنا صبح
قطع كمان رح لما حكيت أنا صبحي وأنت حكيت إنه أنت من Yes, من شمال قطاع غزة صح؟
قطاع غزة.
I think I'm gonna take a moment to state what seems should be obvious, but the fact that they're on the run for their lives, house to house, could only imply that bombings are targeted and intentional. Speaking to the genocide, the rest of the world acknowledges.
Yes.
شكرا يا صديقي. وإذا برضو حابة بعد التنتين بالليل بكون نادي جوي يعني إذا حابين إذا شرط يكون ميت.
اوكي انا هلا بقدر افهمهم ومنشوف هلا هم شو بحكوا. So Subhi was saying that right now it's really hard the connection because of the bombing, and he's saying usually around 2 to 3 a.m. the connection is better because there isn't as much like around that time. So if we want to have like a formal meeting again to speak to him, that would make the most sense connection wise. And he was saying that he can go ahead and send voice notes and I could just translate them.
First of all, obviously, we will do our best to accommodate and get to him ASAP. And I was just hoping that we could let him know before he does have to go that he's seen, heard, and so loved, him and his family. You know, we're going to do our best to the best of our extent, of our capabilities and the network that we're integrating with to get the word out there and to help educate the world on these lovely, peaceful people that need us to come to their aid right now.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful that you said that because that's actually what he said. He said that he really loves, he was saying he really loves people like us, people who care, people who listen and want to be here, and that he really, really appreciates it. And I was just kind of giving him that same sentiment back that, you know, there are so many people here that do love Palestinian people, do love Palestine, want to hear people's stories and hold space for them. So yeah, it's so beautiful you, that sir. You connect, like you guys connected and said the same sentiment. So
I like to think that language doesn't get in the way of humanity.
I think some of the frustration for a lot of people is like just not being able to just like speak in your mother tongue, like really just like say exactly how you feel, exactly what's going on. Like even if you know English, it's just different. You know
what
I mean?
That makes total sense.
Like just to be able to just like
express yourself
freely.
Indigenous.
Yeah. And also like have somebody who understands the context of like the context of what you're saying, and also just like colloquial sayings, you know what I mean? Like it's just so much easier to like not hold back on what you want to say and like how to express yourself. So I just feel completely like torn up about everything that he and everyone else is experiencing, and like I told him that, you know, we're really happy that we're getting to know him and to hear about him and his family, but, you know, of course, really sad about, like, the circumstances that, like, brought us together to get to know each other. So they were saying a lot of things that I didn't know. Like, for example, what Rami was saying about his name not being registered. So, like, prior to this happening, it took about, like, 72 per RAIN's information on what their organization's doing. Normally, it's, like, 72 hours, right, to, like, get your name registered.
Mm-hmm.
And now with everything going on, it's 5 to 7 days to just get registered. And that doesn't mean...
is too yeah. long for what's
yeah.
going
on. Yeah. So that doesn't even mean, like, oh, you're going to evacuate. That just means your name pops up once you get there. Mm-hmm. And then they were saying that around 200 people are only allowed to evacuate every day. I know it's already disgusting that people have to pay money, period, let alone the amounts that they're having to pay is completely absurd. And then even if you have everything, even if your name is on the registry, even if you give them the money, then there's some weird, apparently some weird arbitrary, like, requirement that you can just get turned away. Like, I don't know. I wish we could gather more information on that, because it's very, even if you go to news outlets, no one's really talking about what, like, going over really means.
Right.
I was just going to say, well, call me a fundamentalist, but I mean, to me, it just keeps boiling right back down to the same thing. Could find out a lot of things, and it would be helpful in some ways, but to the further extent, we just need to stop killing each other. We just need to stop trying to conquer the world as America. America needs to stop trying to conquer the world with their imperialist and financial hegemony, and stop doing these resource campaigns that are annihilating and causing erasure of entire cultures. I there are so many nuances and caveats, and there's so many details to the whole thing, obviously, but, like, at the end of the day, let's just stop the thing that's causing all the nuances and all the caveats and the never-ending details of the carnage.
And, you know, like, our guests were so respectful and kind and gave us so much grace, and they literally didn't have to.
Like, can you imagine composing yourself to that end?
No.
Like, no. I mean, after running from your life, house to house, being bombed over and over and over, and you have the capacity to be composed with strangers, with technical issues, trying to convey your harrowing story, and you're respectful and peaceful and loving and grateful.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine being that patient or nice, or, I mean, even the fact that they're talking to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Like us, like our like our context, like where we live, who we right. are.
Exactly.
Like, we're safe because they're unsafe.
Right. Yeah. Couldn't help thinking that, you know, taking a sip during the show, they're talking about waiting in line for hours to get a few bottles of water, you know, and that costs, what would we say, like 6 times what it did, you know?
Yeah, it was like, you said 3 chickens, and I it cut off. Like, I really want to get that void, like, to really put it in so people can get the gravity, and maybe even do, like, the percent, you know, how you can show, like, the percent of how much it is, just so people really get it. Because I don't, like, the price gouging is absolutely insane. And even the videos of, like, people, you know, scraping flour off of the floor, like, just, I don't know. I'm just, they were super, very kind, very, like, gracious, and they just didn't have to be, because
I'm glad you brought up the money aspect, because, I mean, it's something that I've been chomping at the bit to talk more about, but I didn't want to, you know, draw away from these people and their stories, their experiences, and their courageous act of sharing it with us. But I mean, talk about irony, talk about the epitome of the seed of evil, if you will, people having to buy their way to safety and freedom, and having to pay copious amounts, exorbitant amounts, like $100,000 for a family, or $50,000 a person, or something. Money's got to go. As Jock Fresco would say, this shit's got to go.
No, it really fucking does. Like, it really, and on top of that, the thing that breaks my heart so much that I've been thinking so much about is all the medical issues that people have, like just in general, any population, right? Like we all have, we've all experienced that, some people more than others, but where they live and specifically and how much they've experienced and how we know that these people specifically are targeted in a way to disable them is something that is like coming up in a lot of stories, like where people need medical attention from things that have disabled them, like from being shot at, from, yeah, you know, being brutalized. Like there's so much of that in so many stories. And like even with him saying about his little sister, you know, that could be something that, you know, she was born with or developed outside of that, of course, but there are people where it's, they directly like are experiencing that because of being targeted and with the intent of killing and or disabling them permanently. That's something that we know happens. And so just even thinking about people being safe and like running from, I mean, what does that really look like if you're somebody that either has a disability, just, you know, just from being alive and being a person, and even if you have become disabled from what happened? I mean, I can't even imagine, like, how does that work trying to get around? Like, right, there's rubble everywhere, like, buildings are totaled.
Yeah.
The infrastructure.
People don't have shoes. People don't have shoes. A lot of things that, like, because we could never even fathom it, just even those things where they're saying, oh, we went from this place, it's like, well, what was the hell that it was to go from that place to place? Right. Like,
it's like especially what all the bad entail.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, at night with all, you know, we know that the bombing campaigns are very high at night. I mean, it's, can you imagine? It's like pitch black. You can't see anything. There's just debris of total buildings all around you. You could be disabled, you know, you could be disabled or not. You just can't see anything.
Be injured, could be starving, could be dehydrated, could be trying to bring a disabled family member through the rubble with you. I don't understand how it's gotten lost in the sauce, what exactly is going on, like the weight of it, the size of it. Like how in Western media are they able to boil it down to something A is false and B as in contrast petty as some kind of difference of understandings or wanting to do business or something like that, you know, like I'm struggling here, but how do you take the weight of something like this and boil it down to something so meaningless in contrast, and then millions of people believe it and they're like, yeah, it'll be fine, they, you know, this is biblically what's supposed to be going on.
And also just even people that are very disingenuously like, well, that's just war, you know, war's really, yeah, unfortunate, and like that really really phony disingenuous like talking point that some people have where they're like, gosh, you know, I feel real bad that, but that's just what war is like. And it's like, do you hear yourself?
It's actually not surprising when you think about how we talk about capitalism, or a lot of people are just like, well, that's just the world we live in. That's just capitalism. It's how it works.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that like the biggest thing that I'm seeing is the desensitization to violence in every shape and form. And as I've been like, you know, helping out this campaign and just like DMing people, like just these campaigns, I've had some people be like, hey, please don't send me this stuff. I'm really trying to avoid my exposure to violence. And I'm like, I somewhat understand that, but also like you can't pretend like it's not happening. And then other people are like, holy shit, I didn't even realize this is what's going on, because I'm just trying to scroll past all the shit that's coming on my feed because I don't want it in my consciousness. And it's like this battle between people of like, I want to not be exposed to any more violence, as if it's not there anymore.
Right.
And I also can't let that into my consciousness, which is just, it's insanity, because I guess I kind of sort of understood that until I started communicating with these people directly. And that's when I had to like really let it all in. I had to really let it all in, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in this situation, and they are living it every single day, every single second, sending us voice messages of bombings, of gunfire in the background, and they're just living it. And I'm still only interfacing with it through a screen, but it's like it makes no sense to try and like hide ourselves from it. Yeah. Yeah. It makes no sense trying to hide ourselves from it.
Not to shame anyone, because that doesn't help anything either. But who could have ever fathomed that we would have either intentionally or unintentionally created a mechanism that desensitizes us to the point that when something's going on that requires our humanity and our highest level of emotional intelligence, that we're either too fatigued or too aware of becoming fatigued, that we're just like, I actually can't let that in my life right now. I really do hate that it's happening though, but I have a dying mother to take care of, or a special needs child, or rent to pay, or I've already been exposed to so much carnage on Instagram today that I can't anymore. Like, who would have fathomed that?
Yeah. Right. It really speaks to our experience, like, in America, that I'm trying to like figure out how to word this. Okay, to us, we have to figure out how to navigate, you know, what we want to see, how much we want to see it. Like you were saying, Amanda, like, you know, we have our, like, we're so exhausted from having to work so much. People can't even be present parents, right? Like, people have emotionally absent parents, not because their parents don't love them or don't care about them. They just don't have anything to give them. Like, we have all these like financial restraint, you know, things that really seep into how we operate. But what's so wild to me is that we have to just now figure out, like, how do we want to, and it speaks to how much of our own history was shielded from us, like what happened to Native American people here. I mean, yeah. 56 million Native Americans were genocided, and please,
the first Holocaust.
Double check on that. Yeah, please double check on that. If that I'm pretty sure that's the exact number, which is, yeah. I can't even picture that. So just, we were shielded from even learning about the violence of our own history on purpose, of course, you know, but if we lived in a world where we were taught the truth about the carnage and the violence of where we stand today, like where we stand is the way it is because of that, then we would know, we wouldn't be fatigued from, like, we would know how to deal with that because we were taught how to deal with that. And that's what I think is the disconnect for a lot of people. And they're not making that connection. Cause, you know, like, when you live in the region, like the Levant, for example, like, there's so much carnage. People are so used to figuring out how to deal with that, unfortunately, because they're always in a situation. Over here, yes, we aren't. It's because we're really busy creating it or exporting that. But all I'm saying is that could have been mitigated if in our education, if on purpose, it wasn't like laid out the way that it was. And that's why it was, because if we understood that, yeah, if we understood that, do you think that the structure that we're in right now would still be? No, it wouldn't. There'd be no way.
Everyone having to look out for just themselves, you know, like the compartmentalization and like the whole idea that like all this is going on like over there has nothing to do with us, has nothing to do with me. I think that that's like so ingrained, and that's how we got to exactly what you're talking about, is like, you know, the idea that that all these things happen. It's like, well, that was in the past, or that's over there. Like, none of this has to do with me. I don't have, you know, the way I live has nothing to do with what's going on over there. I can't help them. It's like, we are literally all in the same boat. Like, we are all under the same boot, you know?
Yeah. And also, even like something not that long ago, like segregation, the way it's talked about, was like so long ago. And, you know, the way that it's intentionally contextualized to create this like huge separation from then and now. And there isn't a huge separation between them and now. Like, people who experience segregation are still alive to tell you about it. So how much of a separation could there really be? So I think a lot of people really need to, if they really want to know how they can deal with things that are outside, right? Learn how to deal with things that are within. Like, if you don't know, if you don't know how to do that, how could you do that for people that don't live where you live? I mean, we can't even do that for each other here. Even something as simple as like friendships people are like outsourcing like emotional intimacy in their friendships. Like they can't hear about like your horrible day or whatever. They don't have the, what is it called? And I know that this is a real thing, but like emotional dumping has been like a therapized like word. And we're like, oh, my friend's emotionally dumping. And it's like the emotional dumping is literally just someone being like, dang, my boss is an asshole. And they're just like, I don't have the space for this. Like, so there's something really interesting, I think, about even just like our interpersonal relationships here. Like as somebody who grew up in like two different places, our threshold for emotional distress is so fucking low here.
And it's
like everything, everything
too
is
easily
so like,
inconvenienced.
Right.
Yeah, because our whole life here is built on comfort. We can't deal with any slight inconvenience. And like a slight inconvenience is like the world falling apart for you. But then it's like contradicted because then even if somebody says this something as simple as like, oh, like, I don't know, someone swiped my car today and I'm really stressed out about it. You're just like, I can't hear about it. This is too much. You didn't ask, you know, so I don't know what that is. And maybe somebody else could speak to it. But I don't know. I just think that's really, really interesting.
I think it warrants its own discussion. It's definitely a overlap of sociology and psychology and then propaganda. And just the fact that our version of convenience here in the Western world is actually the most convoluted way of living. And because of that, when we're inconvenienced and we can't keep up with the rat race, we're just like, oh, I can't handle anything else because I've got to lick these boots and I've got to pay this rent and I've got to clock in at 9 and I've got to get paid peanuts. So maybe I can pay off my pizza next week. And, you know, like, we don't actually live in a very convenient lifestyle. And so our reactions to that actually make sense. But we were brainwashed to the point that we don't recognize that here locally and within ourselves, as you were pointing to, let alone a Holocaust. We could arguably term it happening somewhere else because of our own government.
Yeah. And not being able to see any connection. That's really, I think that's the whole system's view of it, right? It's like, there's no way these things are connected, but they are so directly connected. Our inability to like think about anything outside of ourselves, to take any time to try to learn about it or do anything about it, you know, to even like change the conditions in our own lives, to like have space to empathize with people. Like those things are all connected to genocide, but we're like, those are two different things. Like they are the same. That's all the same spectrum.
That was something that kind of when the war started in October, and I had a cousin who was being very, very vocal about speaking out against it and everything. And then she even reached out to my Kindness Rebellion page and was like, why aren't you speaking about this? Why aren't you speaking about this? I'm like, I just don't understand the conflict. I don't really know all the nuances and I just don't feel informed enough to speak. And she's like, honestly, I guess I can understand that. Here's some resources you can look at. But at the end of the day, I figured the only thing you cared about is that we're all connected and that when one of us is bleeding, we're all bleeding. And kind of fucked me up. I was like, oh, shit, she's right. And she's calling me out. And so like, it's what Ev is talking about. Just, I hate it when people are trying to say like, this doesn't affect me. I can't think about it because it doesn't affect me. And it's like, well, if it affecting you is literally me telling you that we're all connected and that someone like dying on the other side of the world actually should fucking matter to you, then that can be connection enough. But you also need to understand that their struggle is our struggle, and the imperialism that they're fighting is coming to our doorstep. I saw that there's a cop city being built in Salt Lake City, and it's like, dude, that imperialism is coming, and it's not unrelated. It's not unconnected.
Right.
If I could piggyback off of that really quickly, like here in Kentucky, there's a ton of oppressive legislation coming down right now. And if any of it is passed, we're basically looking at becoming the people that our government exploits and mistreats to a wild extent all around the rest of the world. And I've always said that, like, specifically our employers would pay us as little as they get away with paying child laborers in other countries if they could get away with it. And now we're seeing steps being taken toward that, with things like a police state being erected through this network of cop cities. And then we have the legislation here in Kentucky. At the same time right now, they're trying to criminalize tenants, homeless people, remove the mandate that employers have to give you lunch breaks, and take away over $100 million from the food stamp services here, and make it even harder to get food stamps when you can only, all right, like right now, you can only get food stamps for 3 months at a time. Like, it's scary. And Nate, everything Nate said is just too on point.
I wish more people would see how similar of a situation we're all in. I think the people have really deluded themselves. I really think about that a lot. I really see people not seeing that they are 1 to 2 checks away from ending up on the street. They're not that different than somebody who is on the street. Like, it's such a sensitive, like, thing that you still live in a house, that you still mm-hmm. eat food. Like, a lot of people really separate themselves from, like, where they are economically, I feel like. And I think that kind of goes back to them still believing that there is upward mobility for most people, when for most people that's not necessarily true. And actually, it's like way more probable that it's a downward spiral than an upward one. But they don't see that, and that's why they don't care, because they think they're so different. That's what I'm noticing.
That's the disassociation. It's too scary to accept that it's down, not up. I think right now would be a good time to insert the Martin Luther King Jr. quote of "What affects one directly affects us all indirectly," like Ev was talking about a few minutes ago. Like, it's all one spectrum. We're all so connected on this. To some degree, we are inflicting carnage and erasure on ourselves, because the longer any part of the human race goes on imposing violence on any people, we're imposing violence on all people. We're saying that's okay. We're okay with this.
I was just going to say that, like, that, you know, what you were talking about, like, that is violence. Like, you know, all the things you were saying, Amanda, like, about, like, not paying people anything and criminalizing homelessness. Like, I think that that's another disconnect that people have, is like the idea that violence is just bombing people or just shooting people or just beating them with clubs. But like, when when you're kicked out of your home and you literally, you're going to starve to death, that's violence. Like, that, you're killing people. And like,
or freeze to death at night on the street.
Right. And that is explicitly done. That isn't, that's the other thing about the homelessness being the homeless person's fault. Like, well, they must have had a drug addiction or something. Like, when you get kicked out of your life, essentially, that is being done to you. You are being harmed, you know? And I think that, like, that's the other reason why people, like you were saying, Rose, can't connect to themselves. They're like, you know, that's not gonna happen to me. Like, that's, you know, I'm not that. I'm not gonna ever live outside. It's like, you're so close to that. You're so incredibly close to that every single day.
It's hard.
So much closer to that than a millionaire, as they say.
Right.
Yeah, but no, to them it's like the opposite. Like, you literally talked. I've had like long conversations with people, and they really believe, like, genuinely in their heart, that they are closer to a millionaire than someone that has been kicked out of their home. And like, I think it's such a good point that you brought up, and I've been trying to like word this, and maybe somebody else could like parse it out, but who gets to dictate what violence is and how they dictate it? Like, what are the variables for what's violent?
Right.
And I'm thinking a lot about when we talk about violence not in America, the examples that are cited often are like when killing occurs in like a close proximity, right? Particularly if it's like with your own body, or like it's more like intimate, right? But here, you know, we kill people all the time, and we kill people overseas all the time, but because it's not directly face to face, it's not violent. So it's not violent to send a drone. It's not violent to bomb somebody's car. Like, and I think like that separation, like there's something about the way that they're like, oh, but it's not violent because I wasn't face to face with this person. I personally didn't like use my body to do that. It was separate, and I used this tool, and it was far away. And there's just something about that in our psyche here, and the way that we're taught about violence, that I find like very, very interesting. Because like, even if somebody shoots, you know, just I can't even talk about it without crying, but just like what happened with Ryan, like just stuff like that. Like, that's not violent. What happened, him being murdered, like, wasn't violent.
Right. The threshold is expectation, right? Like, there's places where that's acceptable, you know, like it's expected in a Black community. It's expected in Palestine. It's expected in a war, you know, but like, that's where it loses that violent connotation. It's like that's what happens.
I think it all boils down to the moralization propaganda. I mean, at the most fundamental level, it's the good versus evil thing. And here in America, especially, we've been brainwashed to believe that we are the good. We're the good guys. And then you have another layer of, you know, only the patriots are the good guys. Only, to some degree, the white people are the good guys. Only the affluent with businesses or professional degrees are the good guys. So, like, literally anyone else who's not rich, beautiful, or popular, if violence is imposed on them, it's not violence, it's what they deserve, because they're not prosperous. And that is deeply rooted in religious propaganda that the country was founded on.
Isn't it called like got prosperity gospel or something like
prosperity
that?
Gospel, and it's there's some overlap in Puritan doctrine and Calvinism.
Man, we're really surrounded by all of that. It's so fucking crazy how, like, oh my gosh, it's so fucked up. Because I grew up here, and I also grew up in Jordan, but I was in Jordan, like, I would say, like, the most important years, which is, like, when I was younger, like, developmentally. Like, I moved from here to there, and then I moved back when I got a little bit older. But just the way people talk about, like, poverty, the way people talk about, you know, other people suffering, the way, like, it is so different. It's why, like, I feel like over here, like, what we're talking about, it's like we're constantly trying to separate ourselves from other people's suffering. Like, it's like we can't see any connection or responsibility, even. Like, we can't ever even be like, maybe I voted for somebody who actually pushed for this really disgusting, you know, law that put this person in the situation. Like, there's no sense of, like, interconnectedness, I think is the word that I'm looking for, versus, like, over there, I felt like, yeah, sometimes people would personalize things and be like, oh, what if this person, like, of course, but it felt like largely the conversation was always just, like, it doesn't really matter why this person ended up in this situation. The point is that we see that, and we're not in that situation. So if we're not in that situation, and we see that, why wouldn't we try to do something about it? Like, literally, who fucking cares how they ended up in the situation? Like, over here, it's like we ask a million questions. We're like, oh, what did they do to put themselves? And it's like,
right,
I mean, yeah, sometimes people make mistakes. We're human beings, we fuck up. Maybe they did do something, but why is it always about, like, blame? Why can it ever just be, it's complicated. Why can't it just be, yes, there are some people that didn't do a damn thing and ended up in that situation. And somebody else, they chose every decision to wind up there. Like, why does it really matter? Shouldn't it just matter that we're the privileged people in this particular conversation, and that if we have something to give, why wouldn't we? And most importantly, if we have something to take away that's causing the harm, like, why wouldn't we? Like, why does it fucking matter? Like, I find that so frustrating in conversation. I feel like that's the hugest roadblock in every conversation here with people.
It definitely is. And I think that a big part of it is being blind to the fact that our environment dictates the choices that we make and how we live our lives. And so, as you were putting forth that bifurcation, I guess, of, like, people who made all the right choices or didn't have a choice at all, you could say, or people who made all the wrong choices per se, they both still end up, you know, suffering in some way, harm being imposed on them. And ultimately, our choices are limited to our environment, right? So even if somebody is a quote unquote morally bad person, I guarantee you their environment played a part in it. But also, just to give a real world example of what we're up against, and to just validate, just qualify what you're saying there. I was in communication with a landlord, with a neighbor I was trying to help through our mutual aid organization here, Appalachian Community Mill and Mutual Aid, and we're trying to negotiate for them with this landlord. They're getting evicted. The freezing weather is setting in. I'm talking like sub-zero temperatures. They have children. They're teenagers. They have children. They have pets. It's about a 7-person household. And I quote the landlord said to me on the phone, "Well, they're not my family. I don't have to take care of them."
Wow.
And so in the following week, during the 7 days that they were supposed to move their stuff out, but they couldn't because the ground and the roads and everything, the lines, everything was in a deep freeze. When everything thawed, they had 2 days to get out. And they went through a very hard time over those 2 days, and they're still struggling to get back on their feet. But anywho, I am unfortunately going to have to wrap up really soon.
Yeah,
and
I'm sorry, like
talk too much. But I could just talk to you all day, Rose. And I'm so grateful for you being here and helping us.
I'm so grateful for you guys. Yeah, sorry to have to debrief with you guys.
No, I'm glad you did.
I just feel like there's just a lot, and I just want to say that, you know, thank you so much for all the work that everybody's been doing to communicate with these families. And I'm just so, so thankful to be a part of what we're doing, and just like for Moneyless Society in general. Like, I'm so excited to meet everybody and keep doing what we're doing. And like, you can't imagine like how grateful I am to like be able to connect with somebody there and like to like, you know,
just know somebody
like,
cares.
Yeah, because I could sense like what so he just like was like so excited to have like camaraderie, and like he's excited in general with you guys, and he did say that multiple times. And also I felt like he was like excited to feel like he can just like kind of take a load off, I guess, and just like be able to talk freely with somebody who can like fully understand him. And like, I'm just so thankful to be able to do that. So thank you guys for setting it all up, and
thank you. Yeah,
likewise, super likewise. Appreciated.
Do you want to do something about all the issues we talk about here on our show? Do you want to learn more, get involved, and help us help others break out of the cycle? Step one is to join the growing community of rebels and kind hearts sharing their knowledge and passion. Follow Moneyless Society on our social media pages and spread the message to people who need it. When you're ready, you can get involved by reaching out and becoming a Moneyless Society volunteer. We need every skill imaginable, large or small, if we're going to resist the powers destroying our planet. And even if you don't have time to volunteer, you can help us build the dream with donations of any size. We create all of this community and content because it is our passion, but we need resources to get it done. Monthly Patreon donors receive cool perks like early access to future episodes, and visitors to our website, moneylesssociety.com, can buy Moso shirts and other merchandise that help spread awareness. We're glad you're here, and we hope that you'll keep learning and growing with us. The goal may seem far away, but we can get there together.